Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
This is a special edition with our guest, Sonny Ono. Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact, and I have the rest of the bad boys here with me. Simon Street, how are you?
How's everybody doing?
Good, good. Sin City, Steve, how are you?
Hey, y'all, how you doing?
Yes, Matt Michaels.
I'm having a sunny day.
Aww. That was nice of you. We must have a special guest on the line for him to say something like that. Let's see. On the phone, we have a Japanese professional wrestling manager and actor, better known by his ring name, Sonny Ono. He is best known for his appearances with WCW between 1995 and 1999 as the manager of many other promotions' Japanese performers. So again, Vegas Bad Boys welcomes Sonny Ono. How are you?
Great, guys. I'm so glad that you guys reached out to me because, as you know, we were just in Vegas.
Yes.
Enjoying your city. And I was there with my lovely wife, mm-hmm. and we had a great time there. You know, we spent about 4 days there, and it was just wonderful.
What did you guys get a chance to do while you were in town?
Oh, you know, one of the best things about coming to Vegas is that you cannot get any bad food there.
That's true.
You know, you can even walk into a taco truck and find great food, you know. And of course, being from Japan and, you know, and living in middle of a farm belt here in Iowa, which is kind of weird because I'm the only Japanese in a state of Iowa. not being by any, you know, salt water.
Yeah.
So we don't get too many sushi here, you know.
Yeah.
So when I'm in town, matter of fact, Eric Bischoff, myself, he was celebrating his birthday, and my wife Julie, we went out to a little sushi place downtown that we found that was absolutely excellent. I wish I could remember the name of the place. But it was really good. I mean, it was right up there with being in Tokyo eating sushi.
Wow!
You know, I mean, you can get some great sushi in Vegas, but you know, you can also, you know, lose an arm for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well,
you can go to Caesar's and go to Nobu and, you know, and leave there hungry and you know,
and broke.
Yeah, and broke. For me. Exactly. You know, and you talk about one arm bandit. I mean, there's, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need to gamble any. You just need to go to a sushi bar in Caesars. And
yes.
You can leave there broke.
Yeah.
So, this place was wonderful, you know. And we had our film, celebrated Eric Bischoff's birthday, and it was a great time.
So,
of course, you know, the all the Japanese that was there at StarCast. Mm-hmm. And along with all the talent at the AEW show, it was just, you know, and not only that, I got to see all the my former WCW producers, directors, which was running the AEW show.
Right.
You know, David Crockett was there,
right.
Keith Mitchell was there, and these are all WCW guys, you know. And not only that, the great star from WCW Day, from Sting to, you know, Bret Hart, you know, Stevie Ray, you know, Ernest Miller, you know, everybody was there. So it was like a big reunion. So
awesome.
it was just a great time, you know, never dull moment. I got to hang out with, Haku, King Haku.
Awesome.
And, you know, see, when you are as small as I am, hanging out with those professional wrestlers is very important. You probably learned this when you were a kid in high school, but you know, it's very important to have some huge, meanest backups.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
When you're an irritating little Japanese mouse that I was, you know, it's very important that you got to have people standing behind you, you know, who is willing to rip somebody's arm off and beat him with it. So,
well, you know what?
And no other than, you know, no other than Haku is the man.
What's funny? Which is funny about that? Haku was here for Cauliflower Alley Club, and I approached him like I approached you about, you know, potentially doing the show. And I said, you know, would you do it? And he said, I don't do podcasts, brother. And I said, oh, that's okay. You know, I understand, you know, we're doing this. And he's like, no, I don't do them because I don't like using the phone. I can't use these smartphones. My kids try calling me. I don't call them back for 3 days. He's like, my phone's upstairs right now. I don't. It was like, it was so human and so sweet. He's such a nice guy.
Oh, I'll tell you a quick story about Haku. You know, he's such a gentle person, unlike the character that he played. I mean, for real, you know, I haven't seen him in action when he threw people out the window. Yeah. For real. I mean, I'm not kidding you. You know, the last thing you could do is walk up to him and tell him wrestling's not real.
Yep,
you
know.
He won't say a word, but he will grab, you know, stick his finger in your mouth, grab you by your balls, pick you up and throw you out the window. I seen men do that. So, and I'm not talking about, you know, we're not in the first floor. But at the same time, he's so gentle with my boy, who is now, you know, 22 years old. But when he was born, you know, we used to go to Disney, and when we did all those TV taping down there, you know, he just wanted to hold the baby, and he wanted to walk around and show everybody, and, you know, he just, you know, that's kind of gentle person. I mean, genuinely very kind and gentle person he is.
Well, you brought up your son like that. I think this is something that kind of gets overlooked, but what was it like for your son to experience growing up around all these, you know, giant, huge personalities and these guys? I mean, that's something that never registers with, you know, us being...
Well, you know, it's really funny because Eric Bischoff's kids
and
my kids, you know, we all those years that we were down in Disney and Universal Studio doing TV taping, you know, we got to go and Ric Flair's kids... Yeah. Matter of fact, we're talking about that while we're down in Vegas, you know, Hulk Hogan's kids, you know, they all run around and, you know, had the, you know, one of the best part that I remember was that doing TV taping, we would, you know, if you're not on a certain show, that's when you got a break. So you say, well, you know, we're at the Disney, you know, and my wife is, and so we take the kids and let's go out to the park. You know, we just got to be back an hour. So we would have this VIP pass that we can get in front of the line. Okay. So, you know, you guys been to Disney and you guys been to Universal Studio. You know, there's a line. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, hour, sometimes longer. But we would go, you know, right up to the handicap lane or VIP lane, go right front of the place, no waiting, you know, get on a Tower of Terror, you know. And the Tower of Terror, if you guys been on it, you know, it's only like, you know, it's like, 4 minute ride.
Yeah.
The actual ride is, you know, but you go up and down, just, you know, screaming, and you know, we all come down and come by the exit, and our, you know, our kids goes, God, let's do it again. So we go around the corner and cut in front of all those people again. So they're looking at us like, who the F are these people? And we would do that, you know, because we're on a time schedule, so we don't have a lot of time.
Right.
So, you know, kids want to do it again. Let's go do it again, you know. And by the third time you go cut front of people, they're you know, you want to, like, I was a heel. So, and I would go, look, if you don't like what I'm doing, just come down to the studio. You get to see me and boo me over there.
Nice.
So pretty much y'all had, like, the fast pass before the fast pass.
Exactly.
You were the pilot program to the Fast Pass. Right. Probably were asking, like, how many people were pissed off when you would just kind of go in front of them? Not that many. Okay, let's do a Fast Pass and make money.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So, Sonny, go ahead. You were going to say something.
No. He was just, you know, my kid grew up with, you know, Ric Flair's kids and you know, Eric Bischoff's kids and Hulk Hogan's kids, you know. So, you know, they had time. And a lot of time... you know, they got to be the robe girls, you know, that they get to go out and pick up the guy, yeah. You know, the wrestlers' robes and stuff from the ring. And at one point, I think our daughters got to present Antonio Inoki with flowers on one of the TV shows. Yeah. So, you know, so they got to be involved a little bit. So it just good stuff, you know. I mean, they were part of the show, and without, you know, being involved in the craziness of the professional wrestling.
Really quick on that note, did you ever in your wildest dreams think that sweet little innocent Ashley Flair would become who she became?
No, but, you know, it's, boy, the whole family, you know,
yeah.
It wrestles, so it's not that much. Is it athleticism runs in that family anyway?
Yeah,
it's great. I mean, I think it's wonderful that she's having such a great success, you know, and
especially with Reed's memory being kind of the driving force. Yeah,
yeah. You know, Reed was dating, you know, Miss Hancock, if you remember.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And we all were scratching our head on that one.
So, Sonny, you know, this is Simon Street. I have a question. You know, I know in the future, me and Impact are trying to put together, you know, a trip to go to Japan, something that we've both wanted to do for a long time. You know, what would you suggest, you know, being the fact that, you know, you're part of the wrestling, you know, family, you know, what would you suggest we do? Like, what's a starter plan?
Well, why don't you guys, this is what I would recommend. Why don't you guys take your podcast, right? Podcasts you can do from anywhere.
Right.
Pretty
true.
Much, right.
Right.
And why don't you do, I'm going to put myself on this thing, since you're going to need someone like me. Eric Bischoff told me the other day how unique my skill sets are.
Yep.
You know, I don't mean to sound like Liam Neeson. Who, you know,
we like your skill sets.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I understand the professional wrestling, so I can, you know, and I can get you in every door you can in Japan office, and at the same time, because of the. You know, I speak the lingo. That's a big plus.
Right.
And I understand the business. So, you know, I can help you navigate yourself, you know, through the New Japan Bushi Road office to, Wrestle One office. It was run by Gray Muda. I can get you through all that. And I think what you got to do, It's whatever you guys decide to do, you know, you might want to do a podcast the next time when they have a Tokyo Dome show next January.
True.
You know,
wow. Yeah.
Going that would be week amazing. Where you can go down, because there'll be you know, a lot of other independent company, a lot like a WrestleMania. There'll be a lot of other event going on, you know, all over Tokyo at the various events. So.
Well, thank you so much, because the reason why I'm very humbled by just you offering that is because, you know, in the 90s, when you were at WCW, you were a very important ally as far as the liaisons with New Japan Pro, correct?
Yeah, well, you know what really worked, you know, this happened in Vegas actually last week, is that I got a text from Conrad Thompson, who runs StarCast, and said, hey, I need your help, because... Kenny has told Conrad, hey, Japanese girls, you got to take care of the Japanese girls. So he didn't know. First of all, Japanese will never tell you that they're displeased, or they'll just quit talking to you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Well,
yeah.
And if you can't figure it out, you're kind of screwed. and they'll never tell you no. So in other words, if you're trying to do a business over there and you're laying out the groundwork and you go over there and have dinners and you're trying to build a relationship and they take care, you know, they treat you right and God, you know, they treated me well and but I still can't finish the deal. And usually what happens, I'll tell you a funny story about the one time the group of us WCW guys was in a lounge in Tokyo at the Narita Airport, and you know, we're having some cocktails and before our flights, and I'm talking to, you know, Eric and rest of the gangs. I think Kevin Nash was there, and you know, talking to you like I'm talking to you now in English. Then I walked over to the bar and spoke to the bartender in Japanese. and the guy that was at the bar, I mean, this guy had a cowboy hat, you know, a boot, the whole works. It's obvious this guy was from Texas. And he says to me, he goes, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like a stereotypical, right? I mean, it's like right out of the movie. He turns to me and says, "Hey, partner." And I looked at him. I said, "Yeah." He says, "You know, I noticed you can speak English and Japanese." And I said, "Yeah, you know, that's not that unique of it, you know." But he said, no, you don't understand. He says, "You speak English like I speak English." He right. says to me.
Right.
So, you know, without a heavy accent, and I understand what he was getting at. He says, "I've been here three times trying to do business here with, you know, XWZ, but I can't seem to get through to them. They treat me like $1 million every time I come here. They put me up in a great hotels and takes me out to dinner, and we go to their, you know, we go to their office, have a great meeting. We go to their manufacturing plant, we have a great meeting, but I can't seem to close this deal. My product," he was selling actually an oil drilling bit.
Huh.
You know,
huh.
And he says, "I can't seem to close the deal." And I said, "Well," he said, "you've been here three times, and what period of time?" He says, "Well, almost a year." I said, and he says, "My product is better, you know." And he started to explain about his product. No. He says, I can save them money, but I can't seem to make this deal happen. I can't close the deal." I said to him, let me explain something to you, that they're never going to tell you they're not going to buy this stuff. You can come here 50 times.
Huh.
If you don't get it, that they're never going to buy you stuff.
Hmm.
They're never going to tell you that. It's their nature that it's, you know, it's the best word I can tell you is that they're ambiguous.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Wow.
And that the reason being is that because they don't want a confrontation, so they don't want to say, "No, we're not buying you stuff."
Ah, that makes
They'll
sense.
Never do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's like this. You go to Japan you're a guest, and they'll say, "Hey, what do you guys want to drink?" "Okay, you guys want to drink, you know, a beer." So they get you a beer. And Japanese, you know, they keep pouring you beer, right? That's their custom. You know, they keep filling your glass. you know, next thing you know, you're skunk drunk, and you go, "Man, what happened last night?" Right? If you want to quit drinking, that's what you got to do. You got to quit drinking. You got to keep your glass full, so they can't keep
it. Ah, that makes sense.
That means you're done drinking.
That
but
makes
if you
sense.
Keep drinking, it's their custom to be a great host. So, he drank it. That means he must want more. So they keep pouring.
Yeah. I think.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like that.
I think
so. I told the guy, I said, "Look, here's the deal. You know, it's a relation building things in order for you to do business in Japan. You got to build a relationship. It's not about the money. It's not about the, you know, it's who they're doing the business with. It's about having trust. And one of the reasons, going back to WCW and the New Japan relationship, why that thing worked so well was because we had a great relationship between Eric Bischoff and Masa Saito.
Yeah.
And one of my jobs was to make sure that, you know, we didn't offend them and that, you know, by accidentally,
right.
we didn't offend them.
Right.
You know? And that was part of my job, you know, and that's why I think, and that relationship between Eric Bischoff and Masa Saito developed so well that, you know, when one asked, generally we accommodated. That's how the NWO Japan, which is, you know, that Eric allowed for them to have,
right,
without exchange of any money.
Right.
And that was the biggest angle New Japan had to True. This date. Mm-hmm. They sold $8 million worth of T-shirt in 1998, according to one of their executives, we would, Eric and I was to honor Masahiro Saito since he passed away last year in July.
Right.
We went over to his memorial event in Osaka just a few months ago. And that's how close these guys, you know, our relationship was. We went, you know, out of all the people we did business with, Masa had done business in the past, you know, we went over there to honor Masa's, you know, his memory.
Yeah.
And by doing stuff like that, because we were friends, we didn't go there to get something. We didn't go there to do, you know what I mean?
Right.
We went there to honor Michi Saito, which is Masa's wife. And we all became friends. We were like family.
Right.
And that's why how that business developed. And that's how that's why it worked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, to put a feather in my cap, but it's hard doing business in a other country. You got to know their stuff. You got to know their customs. You got to know way they act. And, you know, it's no brain science, but, you can offend somebody without knowing that you're offending somebody. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
So anyway, that was one of the reasons why WCW in New Japan was it worked. You know, you had a guy like Brad Reagans who was Brad Reagan is the Olympian who worked for New Japan office along the Masa Saito, and then on this side at WCW had me and certainly, you know, and one of the biggest problems they always had was they could never get to the person they need to talk to, man was in charge. And one of the things that Masa asked was, who's going to be a contact person? And without skipping a beat, Eric said, that'll be Sonny. And
nice.
When he said that, though, I didn't work for WCW. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's one of those funny things. Because of that question and the way Eric answered it, that's how I got my job. That's how I went in. That's how I got into pro wrestling.
Wow. So speaking of Eric Bischoff. Obviously, the relationship and the friendship was there, and that helped you work your way into WCW. How did you get acquainted with Eric Bischoff?
Well, Eric and I, I'm about 6 months his senior by age wise, but we used to travel. He was up in Minnesota. We're both 20 something years old, and we used to compete. You know, we had both of us. We're pretty broke. You know, I was a karate instructor. He managed the karate school up in Minneapolis. We're about 100 miles apart. I'm in Iowa. He's in Minnesota. And on a weekend, you know, let's go to Atlanta. There's a big tournament down there, Battle of Atlanta. Let's go down there and compete. You know, it was a way for us to go down there and spend a weekend and chase girls and be able to fight without going to jail.
And this was bad.
This doesn't sound bad.
This was the 70s too, right? So it was the 70s,
yeah,
early
yeah,
80s.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We would go down to
North Carolina, and go up and down Tobacco Road with all those college Southern sweethearts. You know?
Oh yeah.
And we would go to karate tournaments, and that was our excuse, you know, And Eric was a hell of a fighter. And I said this in his WWE produced video about Eric Bischoff. I said, you know, one of the reasons why Eric is not so much known for, you know, he'd been on CBS Sports fighting, you know, semi-contact karate event on national television. So, you know, and he was no slouch. But I don't think he really chased it like I did, you know.
Right.
You know, but he was, you know, he would always get DQ'd. You know,
oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, so he punching would, has to stop, yeah, sweeping people.
Yeah.
You have 2 seconds to score, but he would, you know, put a couple legs in, and, you know, he always pushed that envelope even back then, you know.
Wow. Let me ask you this, Sonny. You know, here it is, the 70s. What was the feeling like when being, you know, Asian and going to these places like Atlanta and the Carolinas, and, you know, where typically there was still you know, and today there still can be, you know, people who are pretty racist or, you know, don't like people who are not locals. Was it,
right.
Was it, you know, something that was...
Yeah, you know, I really never had too much of that. I think there's such a thing as arrogant.
Yeah.
Or you know, there's kind of racism as like a hostile racism.
Right.
And there's always there's another kind of racism that they're just ignorant racist. You know what I'm talking
right.
about?
Right. Yeah.
So I'll give you a perfect example. Ignorant racists would be you know, like even in town I live in, you know, I get mistaken either I'm a doctor Lee.
Lee.
Gray hair guy about my height. I get mistaken for that. Or I'm the guy who does nail for your wife, you know what I mean? so that would be kind of ignorant racism.
Right.
They don't mean to be, but yeah. This is a true story. I actually had a lady literally corner me in a mall here in town and kind of push me against the wall and stuck her hands in my face and says, "Look at my nails." You know, I haven't been, you know, you must be so mad at me because I haven't been back to your studio, she said. And I said, you must be mistaking me for somebody. Then she slaps me on my chest and says, "Oh, you're so kidding, Mr. So-and-so," she said, you know, Mr. Chen or something. And I said,
"What?"
So I just kind of played along, and I said, "Okay, I'll see you back in the studio."
Wow. My gosh.
But you know, she meant no harm. She was mistaken.
Right.
I know we all look alike, so. But, you know, I mean, just think about the way we look at it. We, you know, if you're blonde hair, blue eyes, well, yeah, I guess you guys all look alike, too.
Yeah.
You know, so. But at the same time, you know, we don't go around and say that.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw a great joke. The Asian comic was talking the other day, and she was saying, she says, one of the greatest things about being Asian going to a college with her, you know, group of Asian friend was that they only needed one fake ID.
That is awesome.
Right? You know, I like that one. So, but, you know, I will tell you, getting back to your question, we were in Columbia, South Carolina. And I don't think you can get too much more south than that. Maybe in Tupelo, Mississippi, but
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Home of Elvis Presley, don't forget.
Yep, right.
Anyway, so we're in, and this is the big national tournament. Actually, I won a grand championship there.
Wow.
But we went there, and I was fortunate enough to be involved in a national first, actually paid, where you could actually make a living. It was called the Transworld Oil team. It was owned by, it was sponsored by a guy named John Deutsch. He was one of the billionaire who, you know, bought Atlantic Richfield with a personal check.
Huh.
I mean, you know, this guy's a real deal, right?
Wow.
So he was our sponsor, and there was our coach was, or is, he's still around, is legendary Chuck Berryman from New York.
Yeah.
And he had gathered a fighters from, a best fighter from all over. And of course, there was a lot of, if you guys remember Billy Blank, who did the Tybo?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Right? Well, he was on a team with me. He was actually my roommate.
Wow.
Yeah. And we had a guy named Richard Proudhon, who was from Detroit, Anthony Price from Ohio. And so, you know, these are like, you know, 6'4", 6'6", you know, 265-pound, lean and mean, heavyweight fighters, right?
I mean,
these guys, you know, these are the kind of guys that if they're walking down the sideways, you probably cross the sideways, you know, cross
right.
the road, and make sure you don't want to mess with these guys. When I mean, they look mean and tough. Anyway, so we're all sitting on a bleacher in Columbia, South Carolina, and we're sitting and watching a guy named by. We had a guy named by from New York. His name was, I think, he might have been New York or New Jersey. A guy named Anthony Holloway. We used to call him Mafia Holloway. And this guy could literally, if you can imagine, guy would throw a kick, and he was, before that kick would land, he could spin around and hit you with a back leg wheel kick, if you know what that
means. Jesus.
Yeah, wow. And this guy was fast, you know, young, fast, just amazing athletic, right? And so he would do that to a couple of guys during a tournament. And so we're all sitting, you know, cheering on our teammates, and there was a group of local guys, and there was a gentleman probably, you know, back then, he was probably in his 50s, you know, and he said, I never forgot this, he goes, because I had to hold the guys back, you know, imagine guy from Detroit and guys from, you know, Ohio and New Jersey, here this guy goes, man, look at that, and...
Kick. Oh no! Oh, holy shit!
And, but he didn't. But he said it in a way that it was like, I knew that's the way they talked, right? I'm not making excuses for them. But that's, you know, he was. He says, "Look at that kick."
Yeah.
And he said it like three times, you know, clapping. Actually, he was cheering for him.
So,
right?
Yeah, so he was impressed. You know, it was his way of showing the admiration.
And, but, you know, you can imagine a guy from New Jersey and mm-hmm. Detroit looked at this old man, and, you know, they all got up and he'd say, you know, we're in a different country here.
Yeah, no joke. Yeah.
I mean, because of a Transworld Oil team, and it was called two teams. It was Atlantic Richfield. We were Atlantic Richfield first, then we were Transworld Oil. You know, I've been to, a team has been, to... doing apartheid. We've been to South Africa and fought the South Africa national team.
Wow.
In South Africa, in Sun City.
Wow, in Sun City. Like. Holy mackerel. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so back in my karate days, I because of my martial arts, I got to do a lot of things. You know, we fought the German national team and we fought the Austrian national team.
Wow.
And so, you know, and like I said, you know, Billy Blank was one of our teammates, and of course, this was before Ty Bo. But martial arts been, and still to this day, you know, it's my a big part of my life. And because of that, because of our friendship, Eric and I, you know, he called me up one day and said, hey, I'm going to go to Japan. You still speak Japanese, right? I go, yeah, I speak it. So, we got on the plane and went over there, and the rest is history.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So, obviously, you've been all over the world. One interesting kind of an event that I'd like to talk to you about now and get your recanting of is the Collision in Korea event. When you were with WCW, you obviously co-hosted the WCW presentation of the event alongside Eric Bischoff and Mike Tenay. If you could please just, take us back and, if you have any stories associated with that event.
Well, I think, first of all, we were either, mind you, when I went to South Africa with my martial art team, you know, I got a call from Japanese embassy telling me not to go.
Wow.
Because, yeah they just say, hey, you know, we can't guarantee your safety. You know,
right.
They're putting tire around people and, you know, setting me on a fire, and, you know, in Suedo. And I said, no, that's not happening. No, that's happening. You know, we can't guarantee your safety.
Wow. But,
we actually went to Suedo by invitation of martial artists from Suedo and taught karate there.
Wow.
Over there.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as ugly as people make it out to be. You know, if somebody's going to put a tire around your body and sit you on fire, they just don't do that to everybody.
Right.
You know, you must do something to piss them off.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, you know, but, you know, we were invited by the natives and they were great hosts. And going back to North Korea, it was kind of the same thing. Eric, you know, Antonio Inoki, for whatever reason, invited us to participate for actually a peace festival in North Korea. Now, as you know, and I certainly found out more after we agreed to go, but, we didn't know that was such a forbidden kingdom, right? We actually flew, and I'm going there with Eric Bischoff, and And same time, I got a phone call from embassy telling me that I shouldn't go. They can't guarantee a safety. You know, and I, you know, by this time, you know, North Korea was kidnapping Japanese nationals.
Exactly.
You know, and there was all that stuff going on. So, but you know, we were there with the invitation of the government. You know, we were told to watch our P's and Q's. Scott Norton didn't read that memo. You heard about what he did.
Yeah,
right. But it was quite, you know, and I knew that this is once in a lifetime opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even if you wanted to go, you can't go there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, if we all decided to go, okay, let's go to North Korea. We can't go there.
Right.
Unless, you know, and of course, you know, a lot of horrible things that happened to some of the American citizens there.
Right.
And it was really interesting because when we got there, somehow, Mike Chinoy, who was CNN a reporter, who was the only American reporter that could come into North Korea at the time.
Wow.
And Deborah Wong from ABC News talked to us at the hotel and said, do you know, I've been trying to come to North Korea. I could never come in here, and I'm here covering professional wrestling. Are you freaking kidding me? at that point, we were, I think one of those guys told us that the only American has been in North Korea since the war, either been captured or shot down.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the only. I go. You got to be kidding me, right? You know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, makes you kind of swallow.
Yeah.
I can tell you, many of the boys. When I say boys, American guys. You know, they were all like freaking out because you know we get there, they keep our passport. You know, they don't give it back to us. And I said, listen, man, where are you gonna go? It's not like you can get on a bus and.
Get out of there.
Yeah.
You know, we came here on a charter military North Korean plane. You can't go buy a ticket and get on a plane. Mm-hmm. You can't go south. That's DMZ.
Right.
You go north. That's communist China. Where are you going?
Yeah.
You know, so just, you know.
Sit tight and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was craziness. I mean, watching, you know. 180,000 people in arena watching professional wrestling for two nights. You know, it was insane. I mean, it was the biggest number of people. I don't know if they got it. I don't real. You know, only cheering I heard was when Ric Flair wrestled Antonio Inoki.
Right.
But you know, it was a hell of an experience. I mean, I can tell you. You know, many things, but I think Eric said it best. He had a podcast a couple of weeks ago about Korea, and you know, Eric and I was we were together as a group.
Right.
They separated all of us, so Eric and I were together, and they had this one Secret Service attendant that was with us all the time, and she would, you know, try to get a quote from us, you know, about all the war crime the Japanese has committed against North Koreans all the bombs that she said. She told Eric one time, she says, do you realize there was one bomb dropped for every citizen of North Korea? You know, what do you think about that, Mr. Bischoff? And, you know, I mean, what are you supposed to say, right?
Yeah. Wow. And was that like a probing question or just were they trying to see where you guys were
at?
Or?
Yeah, well, I think they wanted sound bites from us.
Right,
yeah.
Propaganda.
You know? Yeah. And we just, hey, you know, my standard question was, hey, I wasn't born during a war. Could they ask me a question like, you know, all the war crime has Japanese committed against North Korean citizens? You know, don't you think Japanese should pay for that? And I said, you know, I really don't have opinion for that because I wasn't born during a war. I live in Iowa. that was my standard question. Answer.
I live in Iowa.
Yeah, I live in Iowa.
Right.
And we got corns. You want to ask me about corn? I can tell you a lot about corn and beans. But we were smart enough not to provoke or create an issue. And like I said, you know, Scott didn't quite get that memo. And I was with Tammy, Scott's wife, this weekend, or past weekend, and we kind of talked about that. And what happened was, you know, and we got both of their version. What happened was Tammy was mad at Scott that, you know, she had no idea what North Korea was. She thought North Korea was like South Korea. So she thought that he was having a great time with all the girls and this and that, man. You know, drinking up and partying, you know. So she demanded that he call her while he was there. And there's no, I mean, there's a phone in our hotel room, mm-hmm. and there's television, but there's two channels. Right. One was 24/7 professional wrestling, and the other one was nothing but, you know, Kim Sung-il, the great leader.
Right.
So those are the two channels you had. And you can't call out of the country. So only way you could call United States was you would have to call the operator in China.
Oh, man.
And wow. give them your phone number, and they would call you back. You know, they would connect you through China. That's the only way you can call, make an international call.
Wow.
And Scott had to call his wife because his wife, you know, so he gets her on the phone, and I just heard this from this past weekend. She's, you know, just literally bitching at him, but, you know, you're lying, you're having a great time there, all the girls, you know, you're partying with your boys. Mm-hmm. And Scott, in his defense, he's going, Tammy, you don't understand what a shithole this place is.
Right.
Not realizing somebody's probably listening on the call.
Oh,
anyways.
No, they told us everybody was listening. You know, wow. Or he's not, you know, he's, in defense of his wife, he forgot or whatever. He goes, you know, you don't understand. You're accusing me of having a great time. There's, you know, there's nothing here. You know, they took our passport. We're being led around. You know, I mean, I want to get the hell out of here. You know.
Yeah.
And then phone went dead.
Mm. Oh. Yeah, they cut that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the next thing he knows, there's a knock on his door, and there's he's the attendant, Secret Service person with two armed guards. took him out of his hotel room, took him down the basement, and interrogated him for like, you know, 6-7 hours.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah, and you know what happened to Dornbeer, kid. You know, I mean, he could have been a lot worse, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Could have been fatal.
Yeah.
We could have, you know, it could have been a, I mean, yeah, we could have lost Scott Norton back then.
Yeah.
And you know, so, yeah, so that actually happened. Those things actually happened. One of my great memories that I have from there is that, and I actually have a photograph that Eric Bischoff snapped. We went to visit, I think it was a Riki Dozan, who was a Japanese, you know, he's like a godfather of Japanese pro wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
And he was from the village in North Korea.
Yep.
So we went to visit his, you know, where he lived, his childhood home and all that stuff. That was part of our tour thing we did, and went to visit that, and we're walking back to our cars, and next thing I know, I feel like somebody slapping me back in my head, right? You know, like tap, I go, fuck, I turn around and I look, and it's Muhammad Ali throwing jabs up back of my head.
Oh, wow.
So I turn around and, you know, I said, champ, you don't want none of me? And I squared off with him, and Eric actually took a shot.
That's priceless.
Yeah.
And it's priceless. I mean, like when you say, I mean, he was so kind, he had a little magic trick he would do, and you know, he was funny as heck. You know,
that's awesome.
And he would pretend like he would pretend while you're talking to him, and he was in a, you know, not real advanced stage of Parkinson, but you know, he would get really tired, and you know, but he would pretend that he'd pass out while you're talking to him,
doing the rope-a-dope with you, but yeah, differently.
Make you like really feel like, oh shoot, right? And then all of a sudden he'll come to and just, yeah, he would joke like that. He was funny as hell. He was really kind, you know. So look, I mean, those are the, you know, I guess we all have a selective memory of our experience, but those are the moments that I remember, you know.
Right.
It was a great experience. Hey, we got back, and You know, I remember Ric Flair kissing the tarmac when we landed. And I literally, he got off the plane and actually kissed the ground.
Yeah.
it was raining, too.
Oh, damn. So you get it all wet. So, Sonny.
No, but, you know, yeah.
The question I have for you is, you know, kind of seeing where the business is at now and, you know, you having your role as a manager, do you see what's your take on the manager role in the business today? Do you think that it's underutilized, overutilized, or not utilized enough? Because I've always had these conversations with people and, you know, I just wanted to know what your answer might be.
Well, you know, I think it can play a critical part in a storyline. Because, you know, end of the day, look, you got great athletes out there, and probably now more than ever,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. As far as athletic ability goes, you know, you got a company like WWE and TNA, whose wrestling is the end result to the story-driven, right?
Right.
And there's a reason why those guys are in the ring. Mm-hmm. And so the more interest in the storyline makes the match means more,
right?
You know, so and you're creating a television, so you know the prop. So if you got a talent, especially international talent, but not necessarily just the international talent, you got Brock, who's got one of the greatest manager,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, and that works because Brock is a monster,
right?
You know, and Heyman is, you know, the slickest salesman there is,
right?
So, you know, so that works. That works in need basis as well. You know, if Brock sit there and try to cut his own promo all the time, I don't think that'll work,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know,
true.
And and that's one of the reasons why it is. Another reason is when you have international stars, whether they're, you know, from wherever, from India or Japan. Or, you know, if you can't speak, you can't advance the storyline.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, a guy like Nakamura, Shinsuke,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who is amazing talent.
Definitely.
Probably one of the top worker in the business.
Yep.
Who got bogged down on his ascent to the being a top, you know, top, one of the top players, athletes, wrestler, and WWE Universe kind of got bogged down there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He had a great run with AJ, and that kind of got bogged down because they couldn't create the story.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You look at Asuka, who's,
yeah.
Once again, one of the best lady wrestlers out there. Once again, it's difficult if they can't tell the story or advance the story,
right?
And that's where you can use a manager, you know. There's a need for manager, but not unnecessary manager. You know, you don't need just the pretty face or valet,
right.
If she's mm-hmm. not involved.
Right. Yep.
You know exactly. What I mean, or he's not involved. You know, now. I will also tell you that, because I played a couple of different roles in WCW, when I was with the Japanese, it was pretty obvious, right? I was the rich Japanese guys,
mm-hmm.
trying to buy Mount Rushmore's and
right.
You know,
yeah. Right.
Typical guy who's always taking pictures, and that's where, you know, I was doing a selfie before they were called selfies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're the originator of the selfie.
Those slick-ass sunglasses you always wore.
Right?
So, but I was also with a guy like Ernest Miller. Now, Ernest mm-hmm. did not need a mouthpiece, but he wanted me as like a sidekick, like, you know, Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
You know, I was his, you know, and I got to do, and because our background, once again, is martial arts. So, you know, and I was many times, you know, I was the reason why Ernest lost.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. whether he was trying to protect me or whatever. One of the funny things, when Goldberg was having his run, we had a match with Goldberg. I think you can find this on YouTube, but, you know, and at one point, Goldberg No, I think Ernest, yeah, okay, here's what happened. Goldberg picked me up over his head, and, you know, you got to know Bill. And he gets a little excited. You know? I mean, it's pretty intense in a ring, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And he picked me up. Now, mind you, you know, I'm 120, well, now I'm about 140 pounds, but back then I was probably about 128 pounds soaking wet. So he picked me out like a stick, and he had me over his head, and I thought for sure that he was actually going to throw me on the audience.
Oh, wow. Man.
So I said, I'm screaming at the bell. You know, I said, Bill, if you throw me out there, I'm going to make you look bad. Because I am not going. I am going to hang onto your arm. You know, you're going to look like you got a bad gum in your hand. That's what it's going to look like. So I said, hey, don't you dare. Don't you dare, Bill. You know, that kind of thing. So, and he actually, the finish was he throws me to Cat. Cat catches me. And he spears both of us. So
oh, nice.
That was, yeah, so it was fun time. But, you know, but... So, like I said, you know, manager plays different roles. You will have to, whether you like it or not, you know, because you're antagonist, so you got to be a payoff. So at a certain point, manager have to, you know, either get beat up or, you know, whether get their head shaved or right. whatever. You know what I mean? There's right. always, there has to be a payoff.
Yeah.
So you have to be prepared for that. But you do play a part, a different part.
So really quick then, sticking on the manager theme, Dave Meltzer. Wrestling yep. Observer.
Yeah, the nomination.
This is, I mean, I can't believe that. Okay, Paul Jones, 1986, worst manager. Okay, outside of that, the rest of the list is Mr. Fuji and yourself.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on with that? Come on, Meltzer. I mean,
I
right?
don't know, man. You know, all I know is that for whatever reason, and he should know why, you know, why, reason why we're there for.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you wasn't for Mr. Fuji or myself, how do you advance the story? Because he spoke English, and not as well as I did, but,
right.
you know, that's how you advance the story, right? I mean, there's, so I don't know what his reasoning is. You know, certainly I took my share of bumps.
Yeah.
So I don't know what his reasoning is, but all I know is that, you know, I think he knew that, it, you know, he has an issue with Eric Bischoff, or, you know, they both do.
Mm, right.
Eric always,
yeah.
Eric believed that he makes up half the shit that he does to sell his, you know, dirt sheet.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, all I know is that, actually I saw him this weekend, you know, and I told him this past weekend, I said, hey, I said, I think you're number one, I'm number two. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, that's how many times our name gets mentioned and Eric Bischoff's in 3 weeks. You know.
That's so true.
But I said, I don't want to be you, though.
Yeah. I just find it really funny that, you know, he can give all these five-star matches for Japanese matches, but out of his list, there's only one American and you two are the worst managers. It's right. just ironic to me that Dave loves Japan so much, yet, you know, it's like...
Yeah, I don't know. Someday, I mean, next funny. Time, I should have asked him that, actually. I wasn't even sure, but, you know, but who really cares? End of the
exactly.
day, you know, it's one of those things in our business. If somebody's talking about you, it's a good
yep.
thing.
It's a good thing.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, I was number one.
Exactly, number one, yeah, you exactly.
You know. So no, it's you know I have no ill will towards Dave or you know he's trying to do his thing and
yeah
and you know and that's how he makes his money so
exactly.
You know good for him
definitely
he found a little niche and you know he's still here
exactly
you know, still
well,
making
yeah.
his bucks.
Yep.
He might still live in his, you know, he might still live in his mom's basement, but you know, but he's making money.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And, him and Vince Russo. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, Sonny. This is Sin City Steve, and we've got a little thing that we like to do on the show here.
Sure.
And obviously the seven deadly sins are a thing. So what better way to tie it into the show? We've got a little segment that we like to do called 70 Deadly Seconds. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to list off some names for you. And it's just quick word association. The first thing that pops into your head when you hear these names. And we're going to do this for 70 seconds. So let's go ahead and get the time on the clock. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
All right. Antonio Inoki.
He's a legendary. He's a senator, and he's a legend, you know, who is still alive and still kicking and still going.
Ultimo Dragon.
One of the best cruiserweight ever.
Bull Nakano.
She's actually a great golfer.
Oh, wow.
If you saw her today, you would not recognize her.
Wow.
Masahiro Chono.
I was just with him, and he's still living the Man in Black thing, he's got his clothesline. He's really doing very well.
Awesome. Ernest Miller.
He is my dear friend. I talked to him probably, he called me earlier today. We probably talk, you know, 3-4 times a week for the last, since WCW been over for the last 20 years. We've been friends.
Awesome. Hulk Hogan.
You know, he's the icon of wrestling. If he wasn't Hulk Hogan, I don't know who else would be. And he played a big part in WCW.
Yuji Nagata.
Dear friend, I was with him in Tokyo in February, and he's, you know, it's really funny because I helped him with his, you know, his debut here in the United States, and, you know, he's now getting down to his last part of his career.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, all right. That
no,
was
no,
great.
No.
All right.
No,
no.
That's just the end of
that's the end of that segment.
That's the end of the segment, yeah. We got to watch those applause on that. So really quick, Sonny, the thing that I'm probably most curious about, you know, in all the things you've done, is your experience with Fearless Tiger.
Oh, you found that? Really?
Well, you know, I've been acting. I started acting when I was 5 years old, so I've been acting most of my life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it fascinates me when I see, you know, especially because, you know, you are a performer. We, you know, that's what we do. We entertain in front of crowds and all that. But movie sets are so different, especially when you're talking, you know, the early 90s, low budget, and, you know.
Yeah. Film One production from Toronto.
Yeah. Like, so what was the experience? How long did you actually work on the film?
Actually, you know, it was. I think I was up in Toronto for 2 weeks, and then we actually went to Japan and went to Hong Kong.
Nice.
Finished the movie. You know, Bolo Young was in the movie.
Yep.
Jamie Farr was in a movie.
Yeah.
Monica Schneer was in a movie. She was a big model. The love interest of the star, Jalal Marie. His first movie, by the way.
Wow.
And he owned a jewelry manufacturing company. So instead of me getting paid, I ended up with getting some diamonds.
All right. That's nice. That's all right.
Yeah, you know, and beside it, you know, I didn't have to pay tax on that. So.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
and I'll tell you one funny story about that. It was while we were in China, when we got there, you know, because we go there and, you know, we're finished that part of the movie, finishing movie. So, you know, they didn't know that it was a low budget, you know, small production company. The film industry in China, Hong Kong, you know, didn't know what we were.
Right.
So they wanted to do this press thing, right? They wanted to get some, you know. One of the things we got to do was, okay, we're going out to this film premiere while we're in Hong Kong, and Miss Donna, we would like to have you go make the red carpet with Miss Asia Pacific.
Ooh, okay.
And I said, yeah, yeah, I could do that. And then next, I think not a time was I got to, you know, I got to walk the red carpet with Miss Hong Kong, you know.
Oh, nice. And, right on.
Yeah, so those were great perks.
That's a very great perk.
Yeah, and it's just a photo ops, right?
Basically. Right.
You know, they had no idea who the hell I was, you know. But and actually, while I was there, they did a Hong Kong company offer me 4 film deals. No kidding,
wow.
4 movie deals.
Wow!
But they shoot film over there, and they don't really use stuntmen as you know. They
right.
You
know, yep.
We didn't really use a stuntman on this film either. But because they will use local karate guys,
right?
And John Fournette was the stunt coordinator,
huh?
And he was from Toronto, and we had this one shot. I mean, you know, it's 5 a.m. alleyway. We're fighting an alleyway, and I was supposed to kick this guy in the head, one of the bad guys, but he didn't really react to the kick, right? So. After about the 5th time, you know, everybody wants to go home, and so John Fournette comes over to me and goes, "Hey, just go ahead and kick him." I looked at him and I go, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, just go ahead and kick him." Yeah, the poor guy, I broke his nose.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Oh, man.
But hey, you know what? It looked great.
Yeah, of course.
It looked really real. So there you go.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. That's the wonder of it.
Yeah, secret of filmmaking.
Yep.
So Sonny.
But yeah. So yeah, that was. I think he was released in U.S. as a Fearless Tiger.
Yeah.
The Black Pearl.
The Black Pearl.
Originally
yeah.
Released and yeah, then it was a Fearless Tiger. It was released in U.S.
And it only took him 3 more years to release it in the U.S. after its release in Canada.
Yeah.
So.
You know, he's still making. You know, Jalan is still making movies. I mean, he made movies with all those. You know. Hong Kong stars my old girlfriend who became Lady Kung Fu, Cynthia Rothrock.
Wow.
She was my girlfriend for like a very short period of time because I left her in Vegas actually. I said, I can't take this anymore. I got to leave. So I got
to get
home.
I hear that.
Good story. But anyway.
So, Johnny. Sonny, I don't know why I said Johnny. I was thinking of something else.
Right.
So, Sonny, sorry about that. This is a point where we have our last segment that we will have you go through. Ordinarily, these guys allow me to have this segment by the graces of their heart because I can tend to talk too much. This segment is basically a time where either inside the ring or outside the ring, you have experienced something either so traumatic or so just awestruck that the only comment you could probably say, whether it was in your head or out loud, was, "Oh, shit."
Okay, let me think. There've been some crazy times where Jimmy the Snuka one time.
Oh boy!
We were doing XWF.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
I had a guy named Ryan. I'm trying to think of his name, but his ring name was Vapor. Was an Asian guy. I was managing him, and he was having a match with Jimmy the Snuka's son.
Mm. Okay.
And of course, doing a match, you know, I'm yanking his leg or doing something to so his dad, the Jimmy the Snuka, comes out, and he's gonna, you know, he's gonna put a boot to me, and this is the best part. So we're going over the finish, and he says to me, he goes, "Hey, so finish is after." Jimmy the Snuka Jr. beats my guy. We both get splashed in a ring.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
His son splashes, Snuka Jr. splashes my guy, and Jimmy the Snuka splashes me.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, listen, on a good day, like, you know how much I weigh, I already told you that. So he says to me, Jimmy the Snuka says, I said, excuse me, what are we doing? And he says, well, he goes, brother, I splash you. You know, my finish. I splash you. I said, it sounds very dangerous to me. He goes, no, no problem. He says, and then he said, no problem. No, real easy. So I'm worried, right? I'm worried, you know. I don't want to make him look bad. I don't want to get hurt. So we're getting ready to go out. And he comes over to me and goes, hey, okay, so when I splash you, you come up to catch me, okay? I go, what?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, you come up to catch me, you know, so break my fall in a little bit, okay? I'm old, so you need to catch me. I go, oh, and I'm thinking to myself, how in the F am I going to catch this 275 man who is still, you know, still jacked,
mm-hmm.
and he's gonna jump off, you know, 5-foot turnbuckle. And it's going to splash me. And, you know, you look, you know, I'm flattered that I did it. But when he tells me to catch him, now I'm under pressure here.
Right.
You know, I'm laying flat on my back. And I'm supposed to time it so that when he hits me, I'm supposed to come up. He goes, just come up and catch me.
Oh.
I go, yeah, well, I tried. All I know is I got such a freaking whiplash, I couldn't move my neck. I looked like Tony Schiavone for about a month.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Every time somebody asked me a question, I had to turn my whole body to look at people. Yeah. Yeah, that was my old crap or whatever that moment was.
I got
one more version. We were in MGM Grand, and we're in the back. And Nitro Girl, you know, we're back there. And they used to keep like a bin of candies that was always on the hallway. And you remember Nitro Girl Shay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Asian girl.
Yep. I know Impact remembers her.
Stop.
Anyway, so she's on the other side of this bucket, this big pail, picking out candies, you know, bending over, picking up candies. So I was doing the same on the opposite side. So I'm getting a pretty good view. and she had her costume on, you know, her costume for dancing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And something snapped in her back, and next thing you know, her top was in the candy bin.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
So that was kind of, it wasn't an old crap moment. It was more like, oh my God, I died and gone to heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Candy and boobs.
And then she looks at me like we kind of connect. Of course, you know, my eyeball wasn't actually looking at her eyes.
Right.
She says to me, she goes, Sonny, aren't you going to help me cover up? I said, what do you want me to do? I can't, like, reach across and, you know, cover your boobs. So, but, yeah, that was one of my moments, my fond moments of WCW.
Awesome. Wow.
That's awesome, Sonny. Well, Liz, man, thank you so much for your time, man, just hanging out with us.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Oh, yeah, not a problem. And I see you're more active on your Facebook social media than you are on any other. Is that correct?
Yeah. I guess Instagram and all that stuff, I don't quite figure it out, but, you know.
Hey, me and you are the same.
Facebook, exactly the same.
Facebook and MySpace will always be our favorites, right, Sonny?
Right. I'm still waiting for, you know, when we connect to internet. Do you remember the phone line used to make that noise?
Oh, yeah.
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 I'm still waiting for that. Every time I'm always amazing that the new technology we can actually connect.
Yeah, exactly. So. All right. Well, look, once again, everyone, it was Sonny. First off, thank you once again, and we appreciate it. And everyone, Sonny Ono.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Thank you.
What's up, y'all? This is Sin City Steve. Just urging you to join us, the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting, as we are going to be at ROH, Death Before Dishonor, on September the 27th, live from Sam's Town here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Bell time is 6 p.m., and the very next night, September the 28th, there will be a live international TV taping. Again, September 27th and 28th, live at Sam's Town. Come check out Ring of Honor.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.